Welcome to the Sunday night newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. We will now introduce our speaker, a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. Please help me welcome
Dawn B.
All right. Well, my name is Dawn B., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Southern California. I live in South Orange County, California. And it is just an absolute pleasure to be here with you today. Why don't we start by, I think Jessica might have a picture of my picture that to share with you all. And very good. Yep, there I am. All right. So my story is that I am a very slow learner. I'm probably one of the slowest learners you'll ever come across. I started in OA back in the late 1970s, if you can believe that. I came in when I was 18 years old. And what happened was a doctor came over from Mayo Clinic, you know, a world famous hospital who dealt with people with eating disorders and obesity. And he was speaking at our college and somebody asked him, you know, what the best weight loss program was. And he paused and thought, and he said, well, for the lifetime of the individual, I would say Overeaters Anonymous. And I said, that's for me. I have no idea what it is, but that is for me. And from that moment on, I considered myself a member of Overeaters Anonymous and have been a member ever since. I will tell you that a number of those years in there from the late 1970s until now, there were a number of years when I was the only one who knew I was a member of Overeaters Anonymous, but I always considered myself a member, always, you know, tried my best to, well, I won't say tried my best. I would actually say I am a expert at half measures and delusional thinking and failure in the program. That is actually my specialty. I have the most years. I have almost 35 years of experience with half measures, delusional thinking, and failure in the program. It took me almost 35 years before I was able to get more than 3 days here, 7 days there, 21 days once or twice of abstinence in almost 35 years. And if I am nothing more than a good cautionary tale to any of you who haven't been in the program that long, I feel like I've done my job. If I can save you any more time, that would really be a wonderful thing. So what happened? Well, I was I really don't know how heavy I was. At my top, I was around 250 or so. I'm really not sure because I stopped weighing myself. I have since, after working the program, I've now been abstaining for 9 years, if you can believe that. 9 years of abstinence, and I am down over 100 pounds, and I am now at a normal BMI. I don't need to lose any more weight. I'm at a very healthy, normal BMI, and have been maintaining my weight for a number of years. And so this has been absolutely life-changing, transformational program for me. So I realized what happened 9 years ago was that I finally got to the point where I realized to the core of my being that I am going to die in my disease, that there's nothing ahead for me except for a lot more pain, a lot more suffering, and an early death. or I need to put down the food. I need to clearly identify my alcoholic foods and put them down 100%. And that is actually the message that is in the doctor's opinion in the big book. And I love the big book, and especially, I just love so many parts of it. But in the doctor's opinion, it makes very, very clear to us that we are 100%, if we are the real deal, if we are the real chronic compulsive overeater, there is no other way out than to pick up this program with all the enthusiasm and work it with all the enthusiasm that a drowning person grabs a life preserver. And I continue to this day to work this program like my life depends on it, because it absolutely does. And that's when I got to the point 9 years ago when I realized I am going to die in my disease. I could barely walk up a flight of steps. I would have to pause numerous times to huff and puff. My heart was doing all kinds of strange things. I'm a mother of 4 children. 3 of them have autism. 2 of them also have mental illness. They're now young adults living at home with me. My husband is a advanced cancer survivor with ongoing health issues. And I can honestly say that as a result of this program, I am living a life beyond my wildest dreams. And that is not because my circumstances have changed, but my attitude about my circumstances has been transformed through the working of the steps and living in steps 10, 11, and 12 on a daily basis. And it is a beautiful, beautiful thing, this program. So the doctor's opinion makes it very clear to me, and it starts right on page XXI, where it says that we are hopeless. And he's talking about Bill Wilson there. But you'll notice that if you're looking at your big book on XXV, that he talks about the condition as hopeless. There's no other way out. And then the very next paragraph ends with the word recovered. So Bill Wilson went from the doctor's diagnosis of being 100% hopeless, going to die in his disease, to being recovered in a very short amount of time. And that is the reality of what is offered in the big book, is a recovery that happens in a very short period of time. You don't have to wait almost 35 years before you can be recovered like myself. It involves clearly identifying my alcoholic foods. I have an allergy. It states that in the doctor's opinion. I have an allergy. And when I take in certain alcoholic food substances, they're going to trigger this allergy, and it's going to set off a craving. And this craving is going to be beyond my human ability to resist. And so I must clearly identify my alcoholic foods and their common ingredients by, you know, thinking about what are the foods that I've binged on in the past? What are the foods that I have problems controlling the amounts of? What are the foods that I'm thinking about, that I go to bed thinking about, that I wake up thinking about? That's how you identify in the beginning what your alcoholic foods are. Your sponsor will help you. So I get this list of foods, and then these are death to me. I do not take these in. I do not take these in small amounts. For me personally, I had to put them down 100%. I tried for almost 35 years to do it in moderation, to get around it, to take the easier, softer way, to do half measures. That did not work, I can definitely say. And now after 9 years of abstinence and being down over 100 pounds, significantly over 100 pounds, I can tell you, I am now abstaining and doing so happily. That means, and I simply never would have believed it would ever be possible to be abstaining, doing so happily, to not have it be a struggle, and to not be white knuckling it. I would never have believed that was possible. But that is a reality on a day-to-day basis, year after year after year, for me and for thousands others who clearly identify their alcoholic foods and put them down 100%. Because if I take in some of my alcoholic foods, I'm going to be triggering that allergy that it talks about in the big book, and the craving is going to be triggered. If I'm the real deal, if I am the chronic compulsive overeater, the skid row type, which I am, then I do have an allergy, and it will be triggered when I take in these allergic substances into my body. So I put them down 100%, and I grab hold of this program and work it like my life depends on it, because it absolutely does. And that's exactly what I do and exactly what I did. And after 35 years of trial and error, I can tell you that this program works when you work it. So let's turn then to page 62 in your big book. It says selfishness, self-centeredness. Now, when I started in OA, this book right here was the only book that there was. It was the only piece of literature that we had available back then for meetings. And I came into my first meeting, and they started reading out of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thought, what in the world is going on? Why are we reading? Listen, folks, I just want to lose a little weight here, and I will be gone, okay? I don't want to waste my time reading about alcoholics and their issues. I feel for them, but it has nothing to do with me. Trust me. I know myself. Well, now I am so thankful for this book. It has truly saved my life. So let's read on page 62. Selfishness, the first full paragraph. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. And I'm like, excuse me? Selfish? Why, I'm not a selfish person. This really doesn't have anything to do with me. Little did I know, that we think is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that at some time in the past, we have made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. So this is telling me that this is the root. When it says root, I really want to pay attention. You know, when you're trying to take out a weed from your garden, you got to dig down and get that root, because that is the core. If you don't, it's going to come back. And so for it to say root, that should be flashing lights, you know, ding, 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 pay attention. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that is the root of my troubles. And so it says, our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves. Me, the compulsive overeater, I am an extreme example of self-will run riot. Though I usually don't think so. Above everything else, we compulsive overeaters must be rid of this selfishness. I must, or it kills me. God makes that possible. So when I came into the program, I didn't realize it, but my way of understanding the way life worked was to, if you think of a solar system, you know, with the planets going around the sun in the middle, the way I looked at, thought life was supposed to be, was I was in the position of the sun and everything was to revolve around me. Life is supposed to go the way I want it and the way I need it to go. And if things aren't going the way I need them to go, I can be rightfully ticked off. Well, what the big book teaches is no, that's not actually it. If you take the example of a solar system again, with the sun in the middle and the planets, you know, revolving around the sun, the way life really is that my higher power is in that position of the sun. and all things are to revolve around my higher power. And the program is wonderful in that it invites us to discover and find a higher power of our choosing, anything we like, any power greater than myself that I can rely on, that I can put my, that I can rely on. And so what I learned is that, okay, I'm not in charge. My higher power is in charge. My higher power is running the show. And everything is to revolve around my higher power. So the important thing is not what I want or the way I think people need to be, the way I think my husband needs to be or my children needs to be. The important thing is, how can I best serve my higher power? My higher power is running the show. I no longer, now I truly believe that I am blind, but my higher power sees perfectly. I thought I was the sun in the center of the universe and all things were to revolve around me. But what I really am is this little tiny rock floating in the asteroid belt. And nothing is to be revolving around me. In fact, I am essentially, I realize I am blind, but my higher power sees perfectly. I have no clue what needs to happen next in order for the greater good to be the end result. If you think of, I once saw this poster and it had bazillions and bazillions of stars on this poster. And then it had a little tiny arrow. You had to lean over and look down to read what the arrow said. And the arrow said, you are here. And it was one tiny little speck of light in this bazillion, bazillion, you know, magnitude of all the stars and all that's in the sky. And I thought, wow. But really, the truth is that little speck of light is actually the Milky Way galaxy. And the Milky Way galaxy has millions and millions and millions of suns, and even more millions and millions and millions of planets revolving around those suns. So that little fleck of light, you know, size-wise, myself in comparison, I'm like a little speck of dust that floats in the air size-wise in all of God's creation. And so, you know, I always thought I wanted to work for God, but in an advisory position. I wanted to, you know, tell God how God needed to run things. But, you know, I need a more realistic view of what I am the created. You know, I am like this little size-wise, just like a microscopic, you know, of importance. And, you know, who am I to think that I need to tell God the way life should be, and to think that I know better than my husband's higher power how he needs to be acting right now, that I know better than my children's higher power how they need to be, you know, carrying on their lives or whatever. I am blind, but my higher power sees perfectly. I have no clue what needs to happen next, not for me and not for anyone, in order for the greater good to be the end result. And that's what the big book teaches me. So we jump down to the bottom of page 62, where it says, this is the how and the why of it. First of all, so that doesn't say second of all, it doesn't say when you get around to it. It doesn't say, you know, lastly, first of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Wow. Thank you. Wow. It didn't work. And it certainly doesn't work for me. When I, that is the root, that is the essence of my suffering, is when I'm trying to play God. When I think I know better than your higher power, how you need to be acting. I know better than my husband's higher power. I know better than my children's higher power, how they need, things need to be going in their lives. That's when I suffer, and that's when I cause other people to suffer. First of all, I had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided hereafter in this drama of life, God is going to be my director. So we have a lot of movie sets here in Southern California. A lot of directors, you know, directing the show. And so this is a good image for me in my daily life now. If God is my director, I'm going to be, when I get confused and don't know what to say, I need to ask my director for what my line is. So I think of that during the day, before I speak, to practice pausing and asking, you know, what would you have me say here, God? How would you have me act in this situation? Help me to see this person more like you see them. Help me to love them as you would delight in me loving them. What's my line here, God? What would you have me say? Rather than just going into the knee-jerk reaction of how I usually act and thinking I know what's best. You know, I'm going to pause. I'm going to ask for God's direction and for God to guide me. So God is my director. He is the principal. We are his agents. So what that means is, you know, Bill Wilson in the Wall Street arena, the principal is, God is the principal. We are his agents. So that means I work, I'm legally bound to work for God. So God's priorities are now my top priority. I am legally bound to work for God's best interest, not my own. So I am to be in a servant position to my higher power's best interest. He is the principal. We are his agents. So I am legally bound to work for whatever is in God's best interest, God's will. He is the father. We are his children. So I can trust, you know, we're talking about perfect parent here. I can trust that my father is going to be protecting me, going to be loving me, looking out for me. But I'm not running the show. I'm not calling the shots. I'm looking for protection, care, and for to supply what I need for my father. Most good ideas are simple. And this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we pass to freedom. So this is very important here as well. When it says this is the keystone. So a keystone is the top and center stone in an arch. And you think of an archway. And a keystone, all of the other stones are leaning on and put pressure on this keystone. So it has to be, oftentimes it's a wedge shape. And it's very central, very key to the success of the entire arch. So this concept, me not trying to play the higher power, is the most important thing for my successfully walking through this arch to freedom. So this concept of me not pretending that I know better than God is the keystone through which, through the triumphant arch through which I pass to freedom. I have a new employer. Being all powerful, he provides what I need if I keep close to him. And remember, this is the higher power of your understanding. So just because I'm saying the word God doesn't mean that you need to say your higher power being God. It's whatever you have come to, you know, grow towards, learn towards as your higher power, however you understand your higher power. So I am no longer in charge. And what does this look like? So throughout the day, I'm asking for my higher power's will, not mine, to be done. I'm asking, how can I best serve you, higher power? Your will be done, not mine. Help me to see my children more like you see them. And this, you know, with my children's autism and mental illness, when I was on step 8 and 9, this was something that I really was helpful for me to learn. When I was so on my list of amends that I had to make, I listed that, you know, my children's autism was something that, you know, I put on my step 8 and 9, my step 9 list, step 8 list, and then wanted to do an amends. And the amends was, I realized that the harm done was that I did not believe that my higher power could bring a greater good, that any good would come out of their autism or mental illness. I believed that their lives were less valuable for having autism and mental illness. The harm done was that I thought it was an unspeakable tragedy and that, you know, nothing good could come out of it. So that was the harm that I had done. And my amends was a living amends for me to pray, to ask from a more humble position, to ask my higher power to please teach me the definition of a successful life. Please teach me, help me to see my children more like you see them, God. Help me to love them as you would delight in me loving them. It just gives me goosebumps to even say these words because it's so powerful. And in God's eyes, what I learned through this process is that in God's eyes, they are perfect. They are whole. They are exactly created to be exactly as God treasures them. They're infinitely valuable. They are loved beyond measure. They are perfect in God's eyes. They are created to be exactly as God delights in them being. And so my job is to ask for God's eyes to be able to see God, see them more like God sees them, to love them as God would delight in me loving them. And that's what I can do with all my relationships now. Going into them, I can pause and say, God, what is my line here? How would you have me act in this situation? Help me to see this person more like you see them. Help me to love them as you would delight in me loving them. Please give me
that. Dawn, you have about 5 minutes left.
Okay. And that's also how I can, practice with my husband as well. My husband is now, the love of my life. But it wasn't always that way. There was a time when I didn't even want to be in the same room with him, for a number of years. And I can now say, as a result of practicing this program, that he is truly the love of my life and my best friend. And like I said, I am truly living a life beyond my wildest dreams, not because my circumstances have changed, but my attitude about those circumstances by the working of the 12 steps on a daily basis has transformed my attitude about my circumstances. And I have been reborn through this process. It is a new life. That old life does not exist. And I, through the working of the steps on a daily basis, especially to steps 10, 11, and 12, what I used to do is I used to think that I needed to hang out in steps 1, 2, and 3. And that's where I did for a long time in the program. But now I realize that no, the idea is to live in steps 10, 11, and 12. So what happens is when a problem comes up, there's a situation as it will. And this is on page, let's look at page 84, where it talks about step 10. It says that when we continue to take personal inventory, continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along, we vigorously commence this way of living. So this is talking about step 10. So it talks about vigorously commencing this way of living. So I'm going to work at this. So what I do now on a daily basis is I work a step 10 pretty much every day. I will work a step 10. And so what it says is, this is not an overnight matter. This work should continue for our lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness. So me trying to run the show, selfishness is when I think I know better than the higher power, how life needs to be going. And it's not going the way I know it needs to. So I can be ticked off. My dishonesty again, when I think I know better than the higher power, how life needs to be going. Resentment, when I'm ticked off, things are the way they are, and fear, any fear thoughts. So when these happen, it's anticipating that these are going to happen. I do a 10th step, and I have got to tell you, it is the most miraculous tool that I never knew existed in the program. And it is something that I, like I say, practice on a daily basis now. And it's like I can go from a state of anxiety, being really ticked off at something and do a 10th step. And it's like getting a hug from my higher power. And there's such an overwhelming peace after that. And my emotional sobriety is restored. it is a tremendous, tremendous, powerful tool. And then living in step 11, which is I'm practicing through prayer and meditation. I'm seeking conscious contact with my higher power more through prayer and meditation. Also in steps 10 and 11, I am asking throughout the day, you know, how can I best serve you, God? Your will be done, not mine. And then I'm constantly reminding myself, I am no longer running the show, humbly saying to myself many times each day, thy will be done. And there's a beautiful cadence to that. You know, Bill W. was a walker, and I'm also a walker. I walk. And so it's beautiful how some of these things really have like a cadence to them. So it's like I constantly remind myself, I am no longer running the show, humbly saying to myself many times each day, thy will be done. I constantly remind myself, I am no longer running the show, humbly saying to myself many times each day, thy will be done. So the big book is anticipating that I'm going to be forgetting that I'm not running the show. I'm going to be forgetting that my higher power is my employer. And I have step 11 to help me practice it throughout the day as I turn in prayer and meditation to my higher power. So I think I'm going to stop there. And it was just a delight to be here with all of you. And thank you so much for having me be with your at your beautiful meeting. So thank you.